Welcome to the Ether. Today is Friday, June 3rd, 2022. Today on the Ether, De-Inspire, Meet Karma. Let's take a listen.
So thank you all for joining our spaces today. A special shout out to the goddesses that are with us here tonight. I see Aurora, I see a few of you, Clips or Nah, you some beautiful punch. Okay, it's Queenie here. We have Amy, our co-host, and our guest speaker, Karma, from Galactic Punks team. Which is a blue chip NFT in Luna for those that don't know it. And just a reminder that if you felt like you want to add anything during the spaces or just ask anything, just request speaking anytime. Hi, Karma.
Hello, I have finally managed to connect. I am known for being blind.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what was happening, but it's fine. We're good here.
Yeah.
So, Karma, for the past few weeks, Luna, damn it, Luna, it has been on a roller coaster. They say from life to ashes to life back again. And I can really imagine how stressful this has been to you and to all the team, everyone in the whole Terra. I bet it was very hard to manage projects, whether it's yours or others, the communities, the media, everything felt like all over the place. And this is something we really want to talk about today. But before we do so, maybe we can hear more about you. Who's Karma? Why did you get into this space? And I think most of our listeners are actually from Solana. So maybe you can tell us, why did you choose to grow in Luna specifically and not any other blockchain?
Yeah, thank you so much for the introduction. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It's really an absolute joy to, you know, branch out a little bit. I always love discussing with, let's say, neighbors from other chains. It's almost like traversing chains is almost like visiting a different country. You know, all our cultures are slightly different, and it's always incredibly enriching to just have a discussion. Now, I'm Karma. Hello. I come from traditional art world, so like I'm a paintings conservator. And having spent my entire career working in museums and working in this traditional art world, I can just tell you that the traditional art world is a badly oiled extortion machine, and it just does not work. So as soon as I heard about NFTs about a year ago, I was utterly fascinated. And, you know, after just a little bit of research, I think many of us know the story of falling down that rabbit hole and just getting obsessed, absolutely. And that's what happened to me. And I started researching very, very extensively because I saw NFTs as basically this very, very natural next level of evolution of art and beyond. You know, like art is just the first use case for NFTs. The technology can bring us so much more. But at the same time, I feel like people turning to art as the first use case for such a new technology is incredibly telling about who we are and what is important to us. And very, very rightfully so, it was difficult to choose which chain to settle on. We all believe future is multi-chain, or most of us believe that the future is multi-chain. Nevertheless, it's very, very difficult to actually keep up with what is happening on multiple chains. So most of us do settle on a particular one. And for me, it became Terra, simply because, again, I just landed in a space. I started by learning lots about Ethereum, but both Ethereum and Solana were just so very overwhelming, like so much was happening. And I said, just a new entrant to the space. I will tell you genuinely, I couldn't keep up with this. It was just too much. And had I not found Terra, I would have very likely just abandoned the basically the pursuit of crypto, of NFTs. But I found Terra, which was, you know, a very, very UI UX ease of use oriented blockchain that was just maybe not just starting off, but just gaining traction. There were few protocols on it. Back when I started actually being in Terra, the NFTs have not yet started developing even. So I found myself a niche and I found a blockchain that I felt was very, very nice to start with. The community was incredible. It has embraced me with open arms. And it just felt like the right start for me. It was an ecosystem that I could still grasp, that was developing quickly, but was still something that could be contained for a noob and could be understood. Unlike such huge bustling metropolis like, you know, like Solana or ETH. So these were my origins. And a couple of months after I discovered Terra, we had the Columbus 5 update of the chain. And that Columbus 5 update has enabled the Terra blockchain to introduce NFT contracts. And that's when everything kicked off. So I rose from a user to a moderator and to eventually the team member of Galactic Punks, which was the first big PFP project on Terra. And for those of you who don't know, like the Terra NFT space, who don't know Galactic Punks, the project that we can most easily liken into on Solana would be, you know, MonkeyDAO. We strive not to just be an NFT project, quote unquote, but more like a Web 3.0 collective that just uses Galactic Punks as the, let's say, gating mechanism. And over the course of its life, Galactic Punks have, you know, tried to very much push Terra forward and work for Terra NFT space and for NFT space in general. So we run one of the biggest validators on Terra, which where, you know, Terra has 130 validators. And we were, for example, buying floor NFTs and raffling it off to stakers. So we incentivized people to secure the blockchain while introducing them to this securing, to staking, and helping them with just NFT airdrops, which, you know, was a very innovative, introduced many new users to staking and securing a blockchain. And then we also acted like a DAO VC, where we would invest our secondary market royalties in upcoming seed rounds and private rounds of projects. And then we would airdrop the tokens from these projects to Galactic Punk stakers. So there were lots and lots of DeFi X NFT collaborations going on there, while also having this bustling DAO that enabled people to get involved, even if they weren't full-time crypto. You know, it just amplified engagement for everybody that really wanted to get engaged. And I think at the end of the day, that's what we are trying to do here. We are forming communities that amplify each other's contributions and allow people to contribute to what they believe in, to this space, even if they aren't yet full-time crypto.
You know, I don't know if you know, in Solana, we actually have a lot, like when I first joined, I used to see a lot of people with Galactic Punk NFT and I wouldn't know what it is. I'm like, is this an NFT, like a Solana NFT? What is it? So I think your effect in the overall space, regardless of the chain you were in, was really strong, to be honest. And that's very impressive. But I just wanted to ask, how long actually has Galactic Punk been there? Is it 6 months or more, actually, no?
Yeah, so we minted on October the 1st, I believe.
Ooh, that's a good time. Like, you actually achieved a lot during this time until the crash happened.
Yeah, so it is truly, you know, devastating that the crash happened. We were just gaining traction. We had some incredible engagement going. You know, I'm a huge fan of Solana. I'm a proud holder of SMB. Actually, back when the crash happened, I was just, you know, eyeing a Degod. I really, really wanted one. But the crash really nullified my portfolio. And unfortunately, your floor price also shot up immensely. So I am right now priced out, but, you know, better later than never. I shall join you as soon as we rebuild a bit and regroup on our end.
We'd be so happy to see you among us, the goddesses.
I will be a proud representative.
So yeah, I mean, we already know each other, so I'm just going to skip the introduction part and go right away for the questions, because I have so many. Like, I have no idea what Terra was or is right now, so I'm going to ask you tons of questions about the current state of it, whatever happened in the past, about the crash, etc. But I want to start it off on a positive note, if that makes sense. So I want you to tell us a bit about the culture in Luna. You know, like in Solana, we have a certain culture that is very different from let's say, ETH. And the projects here, the cycles here, the community is way different. So I want to know how it is for the Luna users.
Yeah. So I think, overall, when you think about the Terra Luna NFT space, we were just beginning. We were just gaining traction when all of this happened. Think about Solana, let's say 6 months ago or 7 months ago. That's very, very roughly where we were. We were still finding our feet, finding our culture. But it was going very well. And I think, again, the NFT space, for me at least, builds this social base layer of every blockchain that, that it decides to build on. And in case of Terra, now Terra was a very DeFi-oriented space. Everybody, every user was chasing after the highest yield, and some of basically the composability of many protocols on Luna allowed you to carry out very complicated and convoluted DeFi strategies. You know, you would liquid stake and then you would use your liquid stake tokens to leverage and borrow against. You could loop your capital many, many times in complicated leveraged positions. And I think that mindset really influenced how people so NFTs back when they came out, because for a very, very long time, many Terra users seemed to perceive NFTs almost like just another, CW20 token, like any other fungible token, where what was expected was yield and utility. And of course, we all love utility in NFTs, but we also acknowledge that this is not necessarily what they are about. I mean, if you want a lot of yield, buy a bag of, an inflationary token with high staking rewards. NFT provides you with different utilities that can't be compared to just a fungible token. And I think some of the user base on Terra struggled with that, just getting adjusted to this. And I also think that very many Terra users where, because Terra was so user, basically onboarding oriented and easy for newcomers to use because of the UI UX, very high number of users was pretty new to crypto and consequentially new to NFTs actually, which means that for literally thousands of people, minting a Galactic Punks was the first experience of minting an NFT in their lives. And that was something beautiful and really led to creation of a very, very tight, very dedicated community. I think that's something that really, really spoke volumes about Terra space and influenced the projects that would launch after. Like many projects, would include like Luna or Terra or something like that in their names, and would create trades, create elements of the collections that were inspired by Terra and by builders, by protocols on Terra. And Galactic Punks do that too. Now, when you look at my punk, actually, the suit that I'm wearing is called Apollo suit for a yield aggregator protocol that was building on Terra. We were really, really proud of that chain and are still, even despite everything that happened. And we were trying to pay homage and sort of like celebrate the builders that were building alongside us. That was something really beautiful, by the way, on Terra, because it was still such a small and developing chain, at least, back when we started off. Every single person knew each other. All the protocols, I drank peer with people that were building other protocols. We were all in each other's Telegrams and DMs. It was like a big family. And I think that just made the collapse all the more devastating for everybody involved.
So, okay, let's talk about the collapse then. How did it happen? Like, what happened? And I want to understand the things that happened on, like, while the Terra was crashing. What did you do in terms of handling the community, in terms of, like, managing the crisis, etc.?
Okay, well, I think just as a word of introduction for people who, you know, haven't been involved in Terra, I mean, you must have heard about it by now, but the way Terra worked, or the central mechanism behind it, was based on two native assets. So we are talking about Luna, which is the equivalent of Sol, you know, just like basically the native asset that, you know, had like all the governance rights, etc., for the chains. And then a native stablecoin token, USD. Now, that was not a stablecoin backed by dollar reserves or by a centralized entity. It was striving to be a decentralized algorithmic stablecoin, meaning it wasn't backed by reserves until a bit later, which is maybe, you know, something you also heard, like later some Bitcoin was purchased to back it or like support the peg. But basically the way USD kept its peg was by a series of arbitrage opportunities where you were always able to swap USD against $1 worth of Luna. Now, when the supply of USD contracted or expanded and the peg deviated in one direction or another, you would be able to take opportunity and take an arbitrage on that. And you then contributed to either, you know, like further subtraction of the supply or to its enlarging, and then it would like return to its peg. And it worked for a very long time. You know, USD was the most successful algorithmic stablecoin, if we measure success by TVL and by expansion. And everything was absolutely brilliant. But something that many people criticized and something that many people were afraid about was the so-called bank run. Now, what would happen if the supply of USD, you know, was subjected to a like very, very heavy strain from people fleeing for liquidity to other chains, basically dumping it on the market? One of the mechanisms that were introduced to help stabilize that was, you know, the LFG Foundation purchasing Bitcoin and purchasing later also a little bit of AVAX with huge reserves to supplement the stability of the peg. The idea was, you know, if the peg starts to drop, the Bitcoin reserves will be used to defend the peg, to swap to USD, etc. We all know now that it didn't really work. The true DPEG, if none of you remember, it all started on May 7. We had like some like signs of capital fleeing from USD. Like on Curve, we could see that millions of USD were swapped for USDC. And over the following days, the USD peg kept being very wobbly until, you know, I think by the time the 12th of May rolled around, I think its price fell to as low as 10 cents. And it was quite clear that the so-called death spiral has started, where basically it would be very, very difficult or impossible to ever return back to the peg because of just how the system was structured. So if I was to TLDR, I would say that people believed that the system would hold, and it worked for a very long time very successfully, until it didn't. Until the strain of it, some people are, you know, talked about an attack, and you know, it has been laid out in multiple sort of like postmortems that there was in fact a couple of wallets that were very, very aggressively dumping USD on Curve, and that led to the destabilization and the panic that followed and created this bank run. But regardless of whether this was a coordinated attack or not, I don't want to, you know, speculate on that. There was a flaw in the system that allowed this to happen that allowed this to sort of like fall apart. And here we are. I'm sorry for this tangent. I just wanted to ensure that everybody knows roughly what happened before I jump into what it meant to NFTs.
No, I get it. And I'm really, really happy that you're doing it in so much detail, because like in my head, I was planning to ask lots of clarification questions, but you're just like giving me so many details that I get it immediately. So thank you very much. Yeah, please go on. Sorry.
Oh, no, absolutely no problem. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. I'm known in Discord for speaking a lot and writing messages so long that even Discord Nitro doesn't let me post them in one. So, that tells you everything. However, coming back to your question, which was very important. So how does a collapse of the chain, what does it mean for NFT communities? And how did this situation affect everybody involved? Now, I just urge you all to think for a second what it would mean to all of you if basically Solana went to zero tomorrow.
Well, it is. I actually want to answer this because for a lot of us here, specifically like the DGOTS community, at least, I mean, it means if Solana went to zero, that means like our net worth is zero immediately, because we're keeping it mostly in the NFTs. And as a community, I don't know how the Terra community was, but as a community, we get like super nervous about anything. Like our merch got delayed for a few hours and we were screaming rug at the Discord chat. So I don't know what we would do if something like that were supposed to happen. You know, like we have already taken hits in the Sol prices, but it's really bad right now, but it's not as bad as what happened to Luna. So I think if that happens, we're just going to like, I don't know, like cry in the middle of our rooms and do nothing. So yeah, what did your community do? And what did you do to keep everyone calm and, you know, control the crisis, etc.?
You know, to add to Amy, actually, Solana space, the people are very emotional. We are very wild with our emotions. I don't know if you know, like 2 days ago, actually yesterday maybe, Solana went down for like two nights. Actually, it was one night, even not even two nights. And it felt like a whole week. And then everyone was like, oh my God, it's the end. Is it happening? And then I was talking to my friends and we were like, oh my God, maybe it's over. Once it's back, we should paper hand everything. Like, you never know. You should trust no one, you know? So I don't know if it is like this in Terra as well. So back to Amy's question, really, how did you all manage?
So, I think we are all very emotional about our chains, because when we actually stop to think about it, the NFTs are just as secure and they do depend entirely on the chain that they are built upon. That's something that, you know, like ETH maxis often like to throw around, that they want their NFTs to be secure for tens of years to come, and nothing can justify this but ETH. And I will not, you know, not comment on that. Maybe they are right, maybe they aren't. But what did it mean for Terra? It was certainly some of the roughest days of my life, and I think that's the case for many of the people. Like you say, you all are mostly in Seoul. I think for many people who are very into NFTs, we tend to have a favorite chain that we consider our home, and we are very, very concentrated with our net worth there. I genuinely don't think anyone has enough attention span and enough time and capital to be maybe like fully on in more than maybe two, maximum three chains. So most of us do have a favorite home chain. That was Terra for most of people holding Galactic Punks. And because of Terra's design being based on this arbitrage system and of this ethos of decentralized stablecoin that has been rightfully, you know, attacked / feedbacked extensively over the past months and even years. Many people don't believe that algorithmic stablecoins can be stable and can have a long-term viability. So many, many lunatics and Terra users have been heavily accustomed to FUD, to previous slide DPEGs. And because many people were very well educated on how Terra functions and what the systems in place are to help the peg return to its initial and intended peg, I think many people initially didn't really think that this was anything serious. We've depegged before, we've returned to peg, and everything was all right. And that was before we were this huge, that was before we had the Bitcoin reserves. And I think for the longest time, and again, this just amplified the losses, I think for the longest time, there was a large subset of the community that genuinely didn't believe anything could go wrong and believed that this would return to the peg. Now, I will admit myself that I was in that camp. Initially, you know, we depegged slightly, we came back up, and many people believed that we will keep our, we will be on our way to recovery. And it was only for most of my friends, for most projects, it was only on the 12th of May that it truly became like apparent and undeniable that we have entered the death spiral. Like once it became clear that all the Bitcoin has been deployed, that it hasn't really helped, that we are truly and thoroughly, apologies for my French, fucked, only then did people really accept what has happened. So I would say that just initially, there wasn't as much panic as you would have expected out of the situation like this. Simply because most users were accustomed to the FUD. Certainly, you know, all the OGs and all the people that were full on Terra have been accustomed to DPEGs and problems before. But once it really kicked in, and once you lose, you know, 95% of your net worth over like 48 hours with that, like, you know, final drop, the network was congested. It was very, very difficult to get your funds, even if you were trying to save anything. The network was so congested that your transactions would fail, especially for bigger NFT projects that were trying to save parts of their treasuries. Terra didn't yet have the DAOs framework that, for example, Solana or ETH has. We had a very, very basic multisig structure that was well known for being unreliable. And in that congested and difficult environment of the network failing, validators being spammed with transactions, some of these were actually bot transactions, which again contributed to that attack narrative being sort of like loud in the days after this. Many projects tried to save their treasuries, but they just simply couldn't. Now, even once you got that multisig to work, which was our problem, like we've spent, I think, 3 hours on the most stressful team call that I have ever experienced trying to get that multisig to work, crying and screaming at each other, only to then be forced to battle the dwindling liquidity on Ethereum, where we're trying to, like, you know, basically like chase after some kind of a liquidity pool where we could swap it to USDC. I think we burned through like 3 ETH out of like team's personal funds just because of the failing transactions, trying to swap some of the USD to USDC to save parts of the treasury. And yeah, like, you know, I will be honest with you, out of the treasury of our DAO that was 1.6 million at its all-time high, we were able to overall save, I believe, 136,000 in USDC. Now, that is, of course, cataclysmic. And it's, I think, double the burn because this came into, basically, this all happened mere days before our finance council of the DAO that we democratically elected was about to implement a diversification structure, which would have allowed our DAO to spread these investments that we held mostly in Luna and in our validator across different chains and different assets. So had this happened just maybe a week or two later, you know, the losses would have been drastically smaller. Yet another tangent here, but that was really, really interesting. Like, thinking about how we tried to secure the DAO treasury and the project's treasury in a multisig has actually actively impeded on our mission to save some of the treasury. Had this not been in a multisig, I'm very, very sure we could have saved substantially more. But yeah, you know, you're always more clever in hindsight. And back to your question on how the community has handled it. This entire crisis should actually be very, very interesting and should be studied by people, by NFT communities from all the chains. Because this was an unprecedented, incredible situation that showed the importance of NFT communities and NFT assets in a drastic and cataclysmic situation of a chain collapse. So when it comes to, I'm going to discuss everything on the example of Galactic Punks, because we were the biggest project with the biggest liquidity and supply. But many of the statements I will make actually apply to many of the other projects. We have, once everything started happening, we have initially seen an incredible decline in floor price. So the floor price of Galactic Punks before all this happened was hovering around $4,000 to $5,000, which was, you know, like around 40, 50, 60 Luna, depending on Luna's price. Once everything started going down, we've seen like literally an absolute drop to, I think, like 20 Luna, and then lower up to when it reached cents. And that was before, because people were trying to offload their NFTs and their illiquid assets in order to gain more liquidity to pay off their loans in order not to get liquidated. A very, very important part of the Luna ecosystem was the fact that you could use your Luna as B-Luna to borrow against it on Anchor Protocol, which was sort of like the pillar of the entire system. That's what most people actually were doing. They were holding Luna and borrowing against it to buy altcoins, to buy NFTs. And with that extreme Luna drop in price, everybody was at the risk of liquidation. So everybody just started dumping their NFTs. We saw declines in floor price. Until this 12th of May, where it became very, very clear that it doesn't even make sense anymore to be trying not to get liquidated. Because you're trying not to get your Luna liquidated, but this Luna is very much worthless right now, and our chain is on its way to collapse. So people started doing the opposite. People started swapping the assets that they could no longer save because of dwindling liquidity, because of chain holds, because of, you know, Binance and some other centralized exchanges pausing Luna trading. They started actively trying to save the rest of funds they had by swapping them and buying, accumulating NFTs. And that was incredible to see. Like, the volumes we have seen on NFT trading in these days of collapse have been absolutely insane. And just prove that, you know, art in times of recession and in times of war, art is basically the asset that outperforms all other asset classes. And it's sort of like the desperate last attempt to preserve some kind of value. And I think we saw that with NFTs very much. People had faith that the community that they have built will move chains or use a snapshot to rebuild somewhere else and preserve the kind of value that their layer one and the native asset that was fungible was no longer able to provide. And I think that speaks volumes about how, even in times of crisis, in times of extreme mental stress, how people value and see NFTs. And again, I think this was a very, very sad for us, but nevertheless historic and important moment to evaluate how people see NFTs at this time in the market.
That is actually really beautiful. I mean, your quote about art being above anything else in times of crisis and war, I think it's really moving. And I think I can get the people's, you know, behavior changes in times of crisis. I mean, whenever Solana drops, the first thing that I'm thinking of is not that my NFTs are like losing value. I'm thinking like, okay, I can get more Solana. I'm going to buy at the bottom, etc. And then I buy more NFTs. So I get that totally. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, in terms of volume, you saw a lot of volume, but when you think about the actual value behind that volume, it probably was not any better than like any other time that you were at your bottom, etc. So I don't know, like how did you try to, when it happened, your already existing community, I mean, how are they acting in like, let's say Discord chat? What did they ask? And what would you tell them to like keep the hope alive? Because I guess you also had hope yourself that everything was going to go better, was going to get better. But what did you do when you realized that there was no hope at all? What was the advice that you gave to people, to your community?
See, I think, and again, the collapse of Luna was really unprecedented and really, really cataclysmic. Like, we are talking about collapse of two of the top 10 by market cap coins within 48 hours, basically. They went to zero. Yes, crypto is volatile, but what happened in this particular scenario was beyond any volatility that most people have ever experienced in their life. And as I mentioned before, Luna being a very onboarding friendly and easy, like basically the UI UX experience of Terra has been beyond anything else, which made it very, very easy to onboard people, which again resulted in most people being pretty new or being, let's be honest with it, Terra maximalists. Meaning also that they were not diversified. Most of our community members literally lost 90% or more of their net worth in that collapse. So yeah, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was absolutely devastating and it was a horrible situation all along. But even throughout this, there was a huge acknowledgement that, all right, we are all fucked, but at the very, very least, we have each other and we can cry about it together. Now, I smile about it now, but obviously this was not fun by any means. I think being a project lead and for many project teams, that was a double-edged sword. On one hand, you have lost your entire portfolio, a lot of promise in a project that you were building for past 8 months or so. And on top of that, you are expected to still provide some kind of solace and some kind of help to other people mentally and, you know, verbally. Overall, a very, very straining, very difficult situation. So my heart really goes out to all the teams that were trying to provide that help in these times. And I can tell you that these NFT discords have changed in these couple of days into an actual emergency support station for all people from all possible Terra communities. And this is where people came to, you know, talk, to discuss how horrible they felt, to get some help from others, even if that help was not always, you know, of financial manner. It really, really does help to know that you are not alone in times like this. And some of us are lucky enough to have people who are also in crypto in our real life, you know, our partners or our friends. But there is a huge subset of this community that is in this alone. And I think that's a part of why NFT communities are so important, because they allow us to find that digital tribe that we then, you know, find ourselves a part of. So the importance was just really, really exacerbated and really underlined in times of crisis like this. Because these people have just lost everything and they couldn't really talk about this to any of their partners or friends because they just wouldn't understand what happened. And that's where the absolute value of these NFT communities as a family and as a support structure came into play. I think if Solana was to collapse again, it would be a cataclysmic catastrophe, but in times of this collapse, the Discord would still be there your community, your friends would still be there. And you would hold on to your PFP, you know, as a sort of like, yes, on one hand, you hope that it will provide value, but many people also said that they don't care if, you know, their punks will go to zero. They just want some, this is all they have left. All the fungible tokens are worth nothing, or they have sold trying to get something out, but they did keep the NFTs as a reminder. Now, whether that is copium after you were not able to sell fast enough and you now have to live with it, we all been there, or not, I think it's a mixture of both for many people, for sure. And for me, in the midst of all this drama, this was just a very, very beautiful display of the importance of these communities that we are building.
I mean, that is really beautiful. I'm actually really moved by this whole talk, and I'm really happy to get to know more about this, because I think there are a lot of lessons here for us Solana community members to draw, you know, because yeah, we are not diversifying enough. We're not doing the, we're never considering that something like this could ever happen. And that is really it is really very risky. So, and the value of the communities is something that we already cherish a lot, because I think Solana culture is mostly about communities sticking together, acting like a family. You know, the community is what makes a project good. And knowing that, even if everything collapses and even if we will not have nothing left at the end of the day in terms of monetary value, we'll still have the community and we'll still have each other is really a beautiful thought to think about. So, yeah. Queenie,
you can actually see this example when you get rugged, like you buy a rug NFT. Most of the times you tend to hold to it, even though you can burn it. You can do so many things with that nowadays. You still hold it because you're attached to the thought of it, the community sometimes. You know, this is really a good point about the community is always what matters in the end. And I just wanted to point something to Karma, because, you know, sometimes as investors, we tend to forget that the team are just people like us. They were as shocked as we are when things like this happen. And as you pointed that you were not only hurt for your own personal investments, but also you were hurt from your project investments. And at that point, did you feel by any chance that you as a team wanted to give up? You could have. For example, as Galactic Punk, you could have just quit. Everyone would have understood. Was this ever on your mind? And if not, why not?
I would like to play a strong girl here and say no, but I will tell you, like, at 2 a.m., crying in a bathtub with a bottle of wine, of course you have a thought like, I am going to rug and disappear. But this is about, like, 2 milliseconds into your second glass of Chardonnay. And then you were fine and you're like getting over it. No. So overall, jokes aside, I think for us, it was very, very clear, very fast that, you know, we've been working before the Terra collapse for a couple of months on some really, really big partnerships and very large projects behind the scenes that were about to materialize within a couple of weeks, sort of like culmination of months of our work. That sadly got completely nullified by this collapse. So I was mourning for my friends' investments, for how much work people lost, but I also mourned the potential of expansion that my project has just lost and all the months of my work, sweat, tears, and love that went into it. So of course, this was a very, very difficult time. And again, if we were to evaluate and learn from this, I can say that most of the team, most of the DAO members, because our DAO has councils that were democratically elected of a couple of users that then basically lead and streamline discussions and some projects. It's almost like the council in MonkeyDAO, just structured a bit differently. And these people too, you know, in the days after the crash, some of them said that they are quitting crypto indefinitely. It's just, this has hurt them beyond their, they didn't feel like they can recover. This was too much for them. And they just left the space. We haven't heard from them since. And we are very sorry to lose so many friends in that matter. But everybody has to know where their mental health line in the sun lies. And many, many people just went very, very quiet for many weeks or days, and then reemerged and tried to make some sense out of the lessons that they have just been dealt. I think for many, what really helps is to see this entire experience like paying a very, very expensive tuition for some very, very hard lessons that may have been devastating, but are necessary if we are to make it in crypto long term. Because what really truly matters is sticking for the long term. That's how you make it. If you have to take a longer break to facilitate that, that's all right. But do whatever you need to stay in the game long term. Learn about diversification. And as you said, you possibly, if you really love Solana, you have most of your investments in Solana. Please, if you take one thing out of my talk today, diversify and do not keep all your eggs in the same basket, no matter how much you love your chain, how much you love your community. Because at the end of the day, this is still the frontier. We are learning by breaking things, and it's very, very much okay. This is still neck-breaking technology. Just make sure that you have enough safety to persevere in this space long-term, no matter what happens to that one chain that you fell in love with.
That is really wise and valuable advice. Thank you very much. And I just want to go ahead and now talk about the positive stuff. You know, I think we all, my heart goes to everyone who has suffered from the Luna Terra like collapse. And I hope everyone can get back on their feet as soon as possible. But I've been seeing that you're already doing some things to make sure that the future is brighter. So I want to ask about that. What is your plan in terms of making it in the new Terra 2.0? And what is Terra 2.0?
Yeah, that is a great question that no one really has the answer to yet. What is Terra 2.0? People are arguing a lot about that. I can just tell you what Terra 2.0 is to me and what I see the framework as, you know, making possible. Now, Terra 2.0 is not, some people call it a fork. It's not technically, because it is basically a new chain being started. Around 50 validators came together and, you know, they had to halt the old Terra chain in order to apply a patch that makes it impossible to stake new Luna Classic tokens. And that was done in order to prevent governance attacks, because with Luna price being so low right now, it's quite feasible for someone to buy, you know, billions of it and taking over the network via staking all of it. So that's what they did. And again, came together in order to facilitate the launch of that Terra 2, basically, which is now called Terra. The old one is called Terra Classic. In order to start a new chain. Now, that new chain does not include USD as a native stablecoin, which means it's the entire system is a bit different. Luna is now no longer within that framework of being burned or minted against USD and redeeming it, but instead is turned into just, quote unquote, a native asset that represents the governance stake in the system. And stablecoins will very much likely be introduced via bridges, or, you know, we will get a native, I don't know, whether USDC or USDT, and time will tell. But it's basically a new network launched in the hopes of preserving parts of the building community. Something that I really want to add to everybody is, if you haven't researched Cosmos ecosystem yet, I urge you to do so, because again, two coins within top 10 market cap of crypto collapsed and the Cosmos infrastructure held. Cosmos is basically this internet of blockchains that allows people to spin off application-focused separate blockchain networks, and Terra was the biggest one of them. So what we are hoping for with Terra 2 is to preserve a very vibrant and amazing culture of builders that Terra was very much known for. And we have, you know, very, very many teams interested in redeploying on Terra 2.0. Many people rightfully ask, what's the unique value prop of Terra 2.0 without the native stablecoin? Because the very, very big differentiator among layer ones for Terra back in previous days was the fact that Luna accrued value as USD, as stablecoin got adopted. And that was, of course, something incredible. Having this ethos of decentralized stablecoin, decentralized money, was what united most people to come to Terra. Without it, some people argue Terra has no viability of providing a unique user case. Now, I would personally disagree. I think, again, Cosmos, just as an ecosystem to build on, is incredible. It's obviously not EVM compatible, so it requires a bit more ingenuity to actually launch new projects. And this incentivizes people to launch unique and truly original protocols instead of just copy-paste that we sometimes see on EVM-based chains. And coming back to the fundamentals, just the absolute beauty of UI UX of Terra, I will maintain still that it has been the best in the space. The fact that most teams knew each other and worked alongside each other meant that most protocols also worked very seamlessly with each other, again, amplifying that very good user experience. And I think that is what is going to be preserved with that Luna. It's very, very you get very few teams in crypto that could launch a new successful chain within 2 weeks and have, you know, hundreds of teams that have already pledged to build on it and deploy within the coming weeks or months. I am, of course, very, very heavily biased here. I just love Terra. I would love my project to continue building there, and we will migrate to Terra 2 as soon as some of the network, some of the NFT marketplaces launch there. We will use this opportunity to update our NFT contracts, possibly improve them, and with time make them IBC compatible, meaning that you will be able to hopefully move your NFT within all Cosmos chains relatively seamlessly. That remains to be seen again as the roadmap progresses. But I personally am very excited to keep building on Terra. I think it's an incredible space full of builders that loved that chain. And with or without USD, it remains an incredibly inspiring builder space that will continue driving value for Luna. As a native asset.
You know, there were some rumors going around that Galactic Punk specifically might move to like a more established chain, let's say like Solana or ETH. But the idea that you actually remain to your original home, as we called it here, is kind of inspiring and a proof that you are here to prove yourselves, not just to get some cash or just ditch your holders, basically. So what I want to ask is, do you think Terra 2, from a more NFTs perspective, do you think it will be more established? Will you have more tools, etc.? Because to be honest, Terra 1 was not very... It's kind of established at a similar time than Solana, but it was not as developed as Solana. In Solana, everything was so quick. Everything was developing so quickly. We have hundreds of projects launching every day, so many tools. But what do you think for Terra 2? Do you think it would be at a similar pace from this side or not?
Yeah, so that's actually a brilliant question and a very, very valid point. See, I think you are completely right. The NFT space on Terra was still very much in its infancy. It was very underdeveloped compared to Solana. But then again, we were sort of like lagging behind. We only started in October. There were multiple protocols building advanced NFT infrastructure that were due to launch within the next month to two. And that would have really, within those just 2 months, our infrastructure situation would have increased really exponentially. Sadly, with this crash, this will all take a bit longer to redevelop / redeploy, simply because most protocols, most people, even who already did the raises, lost their entire treasuries because they were mostly held in USD, of course. And I think this will take some time to pivot. Having said that, the launch of Luna 2, and this is yet another reason why I'm very bullish on that ecosystem, the launch of Luna 2 also includes emergency allocations for builders. That is a chain launched with the precise goal of helping builders, helping teams redeploy, which again makes me so bullish when it comes to actual quick development on that chain. And I do know and I do hope that many teams will redeploy. I know many of them are already repivoting. It may take a couple of months, but I still see Terra as a viable NFT emerging space. And, you know, I think the opinion on that question will also vary very widely between different people, because success means different things to different people. And I personally don't believe that an NFT space has to be the biggest or has to grow the quickest for it to be considered successful. I see the NFT spaces of separate chains as just the social base layer, sort of like tokenizing culture of that very chain. And I do believe that every single layer one should just have their own sub-community with their own culture, just like we've discussed before, that there are these differences and they are beautiful and they should be celebrated. Not everything has to be interoperable by default, at least to me. I think it's beautiful that we have these separate pockets of projects and talent just finding their own homes on separate ecosystems and building there. And I think on Cosmos, for example, there is right now an upcoming separate blockchain called Stargaze that tries to establish itself as just basically dedicated to only NFTs, and their entire tokenomics are based around that. And I think that's perfectly fine and beautiful. I hope that Terra 2.0 will become fully IBC compatible, which means you are able to move your tokens and assets between all the Cosmos-based chains seamlessly. And that will help us to redevelop and build that NFT space in a way that just is Terra specific and doesn't necessarily have to compare with Solana or ETH in terms of liquidity, because I don't think it will reach it anytime soon, to be honest. And it doesn't have to for me to be successful in its own right. I also believe that on every single chain, the NFT culture is just slightly different, or projects tend to develop in slightly different ways. And I personally hope that, as we attempted before, Terra's differentiating factor will be the fact that many of these big DeFi protocols have been incorporating NFTs as parts of their strategies and as parts of like acquiring public attention and community attention. So I just see different ways in which this could go. I simply really want the premier DAO to stay on its home chain and keep its development. It's almost as if you were to think about MonkeyDAO. If Solana were to collapse, and there will be like Sam gets up and spins up Solana 2.0 together with other validators, that's where MonkeyDAO would go, I think. And that's where it belongs. That's where its home is. And that's why Galactic Punks will not go anywhere else than Terra 2.0. We can't go anywhere else than Terra 2.0 because our history is just very, very tightly tied to that chain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Solana is a chain of builders as well. A lot of people, I mean, the last collapse that Queenie mentioned, it was resolved in 4.5 hours because all of the validators worked at the same time. You know, the whole community came together to solve the problem, and like they did everything they could, and to for a blackout that sized, it was pretty impressive to see that it was solved in under 5 hours. But yeah, I mean, sticking together, not leaving no matter what, is the Solana culture as well. So I don't think that if tomorrow something happens, the gods, for example, would move anywhere or would quit, you know, building here and would just like explore going to ETH or something like that. We are here, we're here to stay, and we're going to build, we're going to make Solana better, I think, as the communities in it. So yeah, that was a really, I think we have covered all the really most important questions that we had about the Terra ecosystem, the NFT culture there, what happened during the crash, etc. But one thing that I think we should talk about, especially in the DeGatis space, is how do we feel in NFT space as women? Because, you know, in Solana, we're just a handful of people, just a handful of women, you know, no matter how rare we are, we still manage to somehow come together, you know, form like sub communities, tons of DAOs, and a lot of, you know, like communities outside the projects, etc., to keep together, to go towards a goal together as unified community. So what is it like in your in Terra, and how do you feel as a woman in the NFT space in general?
Yeah, like that's always such a difficult and such a politicized question, isn't it? You know, there's like this great quote, there are only two genders, a man and political. Now, I think overall, I've been very, very lucky. I find the NFT space incredibly inspiring and incredibly supportive. But I think all of us have been in situations where we are chronically underestimated. We are chronically just reduced to that, like, tokenized woman in the chats. Oh, you are female. Oh my God. Like, yeah, like as if it was like such a very, very big differentiating factor. Like, you're this unicorn in the chats that everybody's fangirling over. Now, I think this is just overall a double-edged sword, as in some ways, lack of women in crypto is just, it's like in, you know, financial and tech, like lack of women there is to some extent, especially in finance and investing, it signifies a broader problem of women just being less financially educated and just being more risk averse, not because of our natures in itself, but because of how we are brought up and because of the inherent bias against women. Now, I will never ever forget about, you know, being on all those crypto parties, you know, after parties, mingles, any conference you go to, you have these like evenings and after parties that everybody goes to and networks. And I'll never forget like a VC boy telling me how rare it is to encounter a woman in finance and in investing, because women are just so bad with managing risk and we just don't like risk. Now, and I always laugh at that because, and again, this is not me being politicized or anything. I'm just very, very honestly saying, I think most men don't consider that the risk averseness part has absolutely nothing to do with finance. It starts very, very early for women, and it's just how we are brought up and what we can or cannot allow ourselves in life. Now, the best example being on that very same party, most men can just drink until they can't anymore. They will have a great night. They will call it quits. Worst case scenario that can happen to them is they will puke all over themselves. Their wallet will be stolen. They will end up sleeping somewhere on their hard floor. Now, that's not the case for women. You learn very, very early on that you are allowed less risk. You always have to be on guard. You always have to be very conscious about every single small detail of your life and every small decision, because it can just very realistically lead to you getting seriously hurt. I'm not saying that this risk doesn't exist for men. Don't get me wrong, of course. But it's significantly lessened by just the framework of the society that we live in. So as a girl, you are inherently, since your earliest years, just brought up to be more risk averse, because that's how you have to be to survive. And I think if I were to say why there are, you know, fewer women in crypto, that's how I would explain it. It's not really about women hating money or women not being willing to work for it. These are all things that I have heard before from these very wise VC boys that I encounter. But it's just an underlying problem of the broader society and how we are brought up, how we have to live. And yeah, again, I love crypto. I think it's, if you are the type of a woman that is willing to work hard and let's call it thick-skinned, as in you are not afraid to go through hardship and you are not afraid to prove yourself in a very male-dominated environment. If you are willing to go through this, I actually think that this space offers you opportunities that no other space is willing to offer you and can offer you. As in, being a woman and being willing to go through these hard steps is actually an advantage in crypto space. Because we are so rare, like we are like a rare mint, we are like a rare trade. Everybody wants a rare NFT. And consequentially, everybody wants a woman on the team. Everybody really longs for that female presence because we do bring unique perspectives with us. And having a woman on a team is, I would recommend it to every team because boy, do you need this.
That's very awesome. And I really completely agree with you that we do study everything as females. We do everything in details. And indeed, it is how we were brought up. I actually had one last question for you about if you had an advice to women, but you've already answered that in your talk. So I hope that anyone that is listening to this recorded later to rehear this exact part, because it is really full of wisdom and truth here. I think we've covered pretty much everything. This was very interesting and very inspirational. We hope that for Solana people and actually any other chain that no one encounters what you guys did, it was a wake-up call indeed for everyone, not just you guys, but for every person that overinvests or, as you said, does not diversify. So yeah, that was pretty good. We hope you all the best in Terra 2.0 phase. Just feel free if you want to say one last thing, or if anyone got any question or would like to just bring a point up, please request speaking. It's your time.
Yeah, I will happily take any questions. I mean, I do understand it might be a bit difficult asking questions about Terra if someone has not really been into it before, but any questions are heavily encouraged. It's been really, really so amazing to talk to so many female voices, to be honest. Like, I remember still a couple of weeks I was on this like basically just like a call with like an accelerator like / VC firm about some funding, and we didn't know each other, and we came on a call, we're both with like the video, and we were both women, and we both like squeaked a little bit like, oh, you're the first female I've talked to in weeks. And it's very, very telling, very, very sad. But on the other hand, it just shows how many opportunities are out there. We just really have to fight for them, not wait for any handouts, not reduce ourselves to just our us being female, but actually contributing to the space and leading by example here with our contributions. And these contributions should stand, in the front with us being female, just being almost like an afterthought. It should never be the first thought on anyone's mind.
You know, we actually have a lounge for the goddesses inside the DAO, and we have a channel called Cocktail Hour. It's basically a voice call channel. And every time we all gather and speak together, we all say the same, like, oh my God, it's another woman in the space. And then we all understand each other. It's very funny. It's sad indeed, but it's very nice. So I can really relate to you. We can all do.
Absolutely.
if you got anything, Amy, we would like to share one last thing.
Now, as I said before, I mean, I was planning to ask many questions for her to clarify things before we actually started doing the call. But I mean, she just gave so many detail, and I truly believe that if you know something good enough, you know, if you know something really good, you can really explain it to anyone to a point that they would understand in like 5-10 minutes. And if you cannot explain it to a person that has no idea about what it is, then you actually don't know anything. And I really felt that I understood everything. And I mean, for me, it means that you're very knowledgeable and you know your shit. And I'm really glad that we had this call with you this week, basically. So yeah, thank you very much. And that's it from me.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being a guest with us. This is our second Inspire Spaces, so it's very nice. Last week was very knowledgeable. This week, too. It's very inspiring to see women grow in this space, to be honest. So, yeah, we wish you all the best, and we can't wait to have you with us as a goddess sometime soon, hopefully.
Well, we have to run Luna 2.0 back turbo so I can sweep the god's floor.
This space grows very quick sometimes, so a day might feel like a week, but it's just a day, so you never know. All right, have a good Friday, everyone, and catch you later in another space.
Absolutely, thank you so much. This has been a true joy, and yeah, see you around, neighbors.
See you, bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was D-Inspire Meet Karma, hosted by D-Goddess, recorded on Friday, June 3rd, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. If you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody want to rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, the sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around 3/4 of a cent each time someone listens to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist.
They can't even say they're making pennies
per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the 8th dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw, shit, now you only got 2 left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointed too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.
Imagine a world in which an old dying man's last dying wish is fulfilled.
Alexa? Can you play that one C-Fi space where he clowned all the SafeMoon and XRP bag holders and then told everyone to buy Luna because it was going to 1,000?
I'm confused why we're not talking about the fact that you can easily, like, 300x your money on XRP. Like,
you know, son, I remember a time. Alexa, enough. I'm trying to reminisce now. I remember a time before Terra Spaces existed, when things that were said on random Twitter spaces would just get lost to the proverbial black hole of time.
That's the best bet.
Why isn't Luna in wind turbines?
Hey, guys,
though? I'm reading all about these wind
guys,
turbines.
Guys, do you mind if I explain Cardano a little bit? Because I've been in Cardano since like 2018 and I can give you a full breakdown.
Just when you thought it was safe to shill shitcoins.
Oh my god, you guys. I don't know what to do. So much blood. It's so red.
From the creators of Your Exit Liquidity, in association with We All Love to Hear Ourselves Talk, Inc. For more information, go to terraspaces.org/donate. TerraSpaces.